Hello, and thank you for joining me today on The Drew Hahn Show. I'm your host, Drew Hahn. I have a very special episode for you guys today. I got a chance to interview musician Michael Grabner, and I'm so glad he obliged my request to come on the show. I've gotten to know him over the past couple months, and after interviewing him especially, learned so much more about him and his music and his history, and I'm so glad that I can help share that out into the world for you all to hear. So I'm very excited for this interview. Michael is an Appleton native, and he has got a lot he can share about life and being an artist at such a young age. And not only does Michael share some of his musical influences, he also goes into getting into music, some of his insecurities of being an artist, and his writing process. But beyond the music, Michael also opens up about struggles he has faced thus far in his young life in a raw and honest share. We get into the ups and downs, the highs and lows, the peaks and valleys of it all, really. I was honored to have Michael come on the show and speak so frankly about his past and his music. So please stay tuned. First, I have a song here. It's one of his popular songs titled Restart. And then after this little snippet, Michael will join me on the podcast for his interview. I really think you're going to enjoy this interview. So please stay tuned. You're listening to The Drew Hahn Show. I bet the future's brighter, a few light years from here. So dark.
Find another star. I build us a time traveling car. Who says we can't live? Find another star. I build us a time traveling car. Who says we So I would say professionally, since around 2017, I was playing the occasional bar gig and, you know, writing music for a while before that, but that's when I really started taking it seriously.
Yeah. Did you have any kind of musical background prior to that in school or?
No. So my musical beginnings, I guess, started relatively late, I would say. I didn't really pick up any, well, I played violin in middle school,
okay,
and elementary school, so awesome. Maybe for 4 years, so I guess that counts.
Okay, yeah,
but
absolutely.
I just, you know, wasn't terribly interested in that. And then I didn't get my first guitar until my 18th birthday, so my senior year of high school. And yeah, I didn't really ever think about singing until after I picked up the guitar.
Oh.
Actually, like, I was learning some beginner songs on the guitar, right? And I decided it would maybe be easier to, like, learn how to sing than to, like, learn how to play, like, Eddie Van Halen or
okay.
whatever. So, yeah, it was just, like, out of expediency, I guess, that
sure.
I started singing.
Did you know you could sing?
No. And I contend that I couldn't. I think my singing has gotten, my voice as an instrument has gotten better as the years have gone on, but especially early on, it was rough. Sometimes I'll get like a Facebook memory come up of like a cover song or something that I posted like in 2012 or 2013, and I cringe
oh, really?
Very hard and wish that I had never exposed that music to the masses.
Oh, okay. Well, it's out there. I mean, you could take it down if you wanted to.
Well, that would require work.
All right.
I don't love that.
Cool. Well, with that said, who are some of your musical inspirations? I know just kind of reading from your website and stuff, you're influenced by John Prine, Neil Young, and Bob Dylan. But how did you find yourself gravitated or perhaps nudged in that direction? And what about those artists drew you in?
So Dylan, I would say, is number one, my biggest influence. In a lot of ways, he's the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing. My musical exploration really started like a few years before I started playing music. Before that, I was just listening to like the generic pop, you know, rap music, whatever was on hit radio, 95.9, at that time. And I didn't really think much about it. But I started getting interested in the music that my grandparents were listening to early on. I was really drawn to like the Rolling Stones and the Doors and Jimi Hendrix at first. And I just thought that was super cool. Like, I'd watch videos of them on YouTube and stuff, and they were just like, you know, when you look at Jimmy or, you know, Jim Morrison, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, like, you know, they're like weirdos.
Yeah.
And they're up on stage and they're just doing this different thing. And something about that just really was appealing to me. And I listened to that stuff and I watched those videos and I started thinking, like, you know, it would be cool to do something like that, you know. But rock and roll music like that seemed like almost intangible to me. Like, that seemed like far away, far removed from anything that I could ever do. And then kind of like in my journey of listening to that like 60s rock and roll, that kind of stuff, I stumbled on Bob Dylan. And it hit me so profoundly, I think, because it was so different. Like, you know, the way he sings, the lyrics were so out there, you know, like the poetry of it. But I think the super important thing for me about Dylan was, it was like, I could do something like that.
Okay.
That's how it felt to me.
Okay.
You know, especially when you listen to like some of the earlier recordings of his, you know, it's just him with his acoustic guitar singing, and his voice isn't the most pleasant instrument necessarily. Especially at that time, I didn't feel like mine was either. And what he was doing on the guitar was very basic in most of those recordings too. And it was just like, I felt like I could do that.
Okay.
So from Dylan, I started really getting into like the more folk revival type artists of the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
So that's where Neil Young came in, right? And John Prine a little later on, who I absolutely love now. But it started with Dylan, and, you know, then I just kept finding more and more of these artists like that. And it started with people, you know, who their career was, like, the height of their career was in the 60s and 70s. And then I learned about more contemporary modern artists who are making similar types of music.
Okay. Actually, if I could, I have another question for you. Kind of, I reached out to another musician in the area and friend of both of ours, Ryan Mandola.
Yep.
Said, you know, I just asked him what if he would have a question, and he gave me a good one. I thought was, he said, I've noticed Michael's influences are fairly eclectic. Examples are Phoebe Bridges, Townes Van Zandt, and Wilco. I'd be curious to know what he values most as a listener among narrative themes, storytelling ability, musical arrangement, and emotional weight.
That is a good question. Yeah. Leave it to Ryan.
I know, right?
What I value most. So I really like a cryptic lyric. That really draws me in.
Okay.
And I think that's a common theme among a lot of those people, from Phoebe to Wilco to Townes. They don't. And I do appreciate like a really straight ahead, like storytelling type of song too. And I have some of those myself, but I appreciate a lyric that like on first listen, on first read, you might be like, what the hell are they talking about?
Sure.
You know,
well, it pulls you in too.
Yeah. I like poetry in lyrics. So that draws me in. I think a minimalist production of music, that's something that really draws me in as well, you know, something more stripped down. And I guess that also probably harkens back to like when I hear it, it seems like something that's closer to something that I can make. easily.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's like, I could do something like that.
Sure.
But lately I've been drawn into bigger sounds. You know, I've been more interested in people like Wilco is something. I've been really into Wilco lately, and I've been listening to a lot of the Beatles and just getting more interested in different kinds of songwriting structures and weird chord progressions.
Sure.
And, you know.
So your music's evolving. Would you say you're pushing yourself more in that direction, or more, you know, into the things that might scare you a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Okay.
I'm trying to start collaborating more with other artists, and Ryan's one of those artists.
Yeah, that was kind of my next question. I know you have worked with other artists in the area with like live shows and that sort of mm-hmm. thing, including Ryan Mandola from Salmon Run. Would you collaborate? Is there anyone locally or world stage, if you could have a dream, that you'd like to collaborate with? And do you want to like record something with someone else?
Yeah, there's lots of people, you know, starting with like right in the area that I'd love to collaborate with. You know, I'm looking towards having a band. I would like to have a band.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be. So, you know, there's lots of super talented rhythm players in the area, right? Bass players and drummers, you know, especially with like the rhythm players like that. People are pulled in, like have so many different projects going on.
Sure.
Right? Are in like multiple different bands. But on my last record, on Restart, I worked with some super talented people. Rick Armstrong on the drums, who's amazing. You know, he also plays with More Than Mary in the Kurt Gunn band. They don't play often enough, but they're awesome. It would be awesome to work with him again. And Chris Hanaway on bass, and he also plays in Kurt's band, and he does a bunch of other stuff too. So those guys, it would be amazing to work more with them. You know, anytime I can collaborate in any way with Mark Goldie with that Rock Garden Studios,
sure.
That's always amazing because he's just got a brilliant musical mind. I just laid down pretty recently the demos for not this next record I'm releasing, but what I want to do after. And, you know, I'm envisioning a bigger sound with that.
Okay.
And he was pretty excited about it, and he wants to play a lot on that record. So I'm excited about that.
All right.
In terms of people who are, you know, on a bigger, who have bigger platforms, who would be fun to play with, some of my favorite, like, guitar players are, like, Dave Rawlings, who plays, he has his own solo stuff, and he plays lead guitar with Gillian Welch.
Okay.
I love his playing. I think Ryan plays a lot like him.
Okay.
Which is why I love working with him.
Sure.
I could go on and on with
absolutely
people, but cool. I think that's concise enough.
Speaking of your first album, Restart.
Yes.
I've been listening to it. One of my favorite songs off there is Running. I was wondering if you could give us any kind of context to that song, or some, you know, what's behind that song.
Yeah, sure. So that's an old song.
Yeah.
That's one of the older songs that I really, you know, bust out and play still these days, because I agree, I like that song. I wrote that in 2014.
Wow.
Yes, so a long time ago.
Sure.
And it's interesting. It's about a girl. It's a love song. I'm not good at writing just like a straight ahead love song, right? It's a love song, but it's also about like the monotony of everyday life in the Midwest, how that can feel.
Sure, yeah.
It's a lot about that. And it's also about like, you know, feeling like I need to run from my demons. You know, that's the chorus. When I'm not running from me, I'm running towards you.
Mm-hmm.
It was this feeling of like, you know, if I'm not running from myself, I'm like running toward this person who I'm in love with. Yeah, you know, that's really the idea behind that one.
All right, cool.
But yeah, I like that song. I'm biased, but I like it.
I walk the streets of town, the weight of fear is heard. hurting my back. You turn me inside out, now everyone's just laughing at that. In small Midwestern towns, days flown by like cigarette smoke. Just enough to get you down, but not enough to get you to go. Though I'll admit that you're pretty good company in a world filled with Jesus, cheese curds and monotony. When I'm not running from me, I guess I'm running towards you. You keep a fire burning, a thought I lost in my youth. When I'm not running from me, I guess I'm running towards you. At age 16, lose your mind by age 23. Get your kicks by making lists of everything you thought you should be. Make the same goddamn commute, get into work by 6 a.m. Pray to God you'll make a change, make yourself see freedom again. Though I'll admit that you're pretty good company in a world filled with Jesus, cheese curds and monotony. When I'm not running from me, yes, I'm running towards you. You keep a fire burning, a thought I'd lost in my youth. When I'm not running from me, I guess I'm running towards you.
I'm back here with Michael Grabner, and let's kind of go through time a little bit here. The COVID pandemic was no easy picnic for pretty much anyone, and the past few years appear to have brought you some challenges, including personal matters and health issues. How has that affected your music and the new album to come?
Yeah, COVID, I think for me, my issues started when I was trying to reintegrate back into, you know, normal life.
Sure.
After I got vaccinated and I started playing again. I started, I started getting back into just, you know, reality, which I think it was difficult for a lot of people, particularly me. I run pretty anxious.
Okay.
I deal with lots of anxiety issues. Just getting back into public spaces and around more than like a couple people just felt really intimidating. Mm. And when I got back to playing shows, like after my first few sets, I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Oh, wow.
Like I literally started contemplating like just maybe I had to walk away from it because, you know, it was like the very beginning all of, you know, getting up and playing in front of people. It was
sure.
like my first time doing it.
Yeah.
Like I felt like so much anxiety around that. A lot of that like reintegration into normal life again was a struggle for me.
Was there a particular moment then through that initial period of readjusting that resold you on the idea to keep going?
Yes. So what it really took was like a good set.
Oh, okay.
I had played a few gigs and I just, you know, I wasn't happy with, you know, I'm my own worst critic, but I just wasn't happy right. with the sets. And then I had this gig in Oshkosh. I was on a bill with some other really talented people at the Time Theater, it's called. And I just had like a 35-minute set. It had all like the ingredients for like, you know, what makes a good show, right? It was a listening audience.
Sure.
It was quiet.
Right.
The sound was great. It was this beautiful room. And I felt that I played really well. My confidence came back.
Oh.
I was like, okay, I can do this.
Okay.
So that was a big leap. Then obviously I had some struggles. Fast forward, you know, into, well, almost about a year ago, there was some stuff going on in my personal life, a relationship that I kind of got my heart broken.
Okay.
And just some stuff with my day job, you know, just
okay.
some stressors. Yeah, with all of that, last fall, I started drinking again. And I'm pretty open about the fact that I deal with addiction issues.
Okay.
You know, I'm a recovering alcoholic addict, and it's been an up and down, you know, roller coaster I've been dealing with since about 2016.
Okay.
It was when I went back out there and drank, this was last November. I had been sober for about 2.5 years at that point. So I had a decent amount of, you know, that's the longest I had ever been sober in my adult life. And I just got to this point where I'm not good at dealing with life on its own terms, I guess. There was some stuff that I couldn't control in my life, and I wasn't doing a good job at accepting that.
Okay.
And I wasn't doing a good job at accepting that I was, you know, part of the human experience is pain.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think living a healthy life requires just feeling all of it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. There's I believe that. Yeah.
The ups, the downs, everything. Everything in between. And I don't want to feel the lows anymore.
Sure.
And I think that's a big part of, you know, where my addiction comes from. Not wanting to feel uncomfortable things.
Right. Can I ask, being sober and then, you know, relapsing, what's it like to go through that moment when you're going to pick up that first drink again?
It's not pleasant. I'm trying to think of how to describe. For me, I started flirting with the idea long before I actually picked up the drink.
Okay.
And I think for most people who deal with addiction, that's a normal thing. It's not usually like things are going great and then one day you see a bottle of liquor and grab and start drinking. For me, it was probably the period over the course of a couple months where, you know, stuff wasn't going my way, and I started thinking like a drink would make this better, which, by the way, is never the case.
Yeah.
For me, for Michael, a drink is only going to make everything exponentially worse.
Okay.
So, yeah, by the time it got to the point where I picked up the bottle, I was already pretty far down the rabbit hole, I guess. But it's still in that moment a really harrowing thing, you know. I had kind of convinced myself that maybe it would be different this time, mm-hmm. right? Maybe it would be better this time.
Right.
You know, that I, there's no way that I would, like, take a wrecking ball to my life in the way that I had in the past because I'm older and I'm smarter.
Sure. When you first got your sobriety, and then you said you were leading up to months where you were contemplating having another drink, what was... From my understanding, I have some family that's, you know, recovering alcoholics as well. Now with your sobriety, now do you, it's one thing to contemplate, you're getting there, and then you do it. Is it still a battle in your head all the time, you know? Are you pretty good about, like, leaving that in the past or leaving that alone now, as far as, like, wanting that urge to drink?
That's a good question. For me, this time around, since I sobered up again, the thought really hasn't crossed my mind to drink, and it's been a while now, and I think... For me, I almost had to prove to myself in a really hard way that I'm never going to be a normal person when it comes to substances, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like this relapse. It was the first time I really had like some concrete sobriety under my feet. And I got a lot of things in my life figured out that I never had before in my adult life,
Okay. Honestly.
Like,
yeah.
I had... an apartment, I had money in the bank, you know, I had all this different stuff that I'd never had, and I'm like, there's no way that I would drink the way I used to, you know, with this life that I have now.
Okay.
And I had to learn for myself that, like, the very hard way, that it doesn't matter. None of that matters. If I pick up a drink, it is going to all end in disaster no matter what.
Right.
But since I've had that lesson, and it got really bad over the course of less than 2 months, and I ended up back in rehab in treatment. But I think I needed that lesson for myself, that, like, yeah, it doesn't matter how long you've been sober, it doesn't matter what you have in your life, if you drink, it's going to be a disaster. And I think that acceptance has been easier than it's ever been before. Like, I just don't think about drinking.
Well, that's awesome.
And I, you know, I obviously, what I do, playing music, I am around alcohol.
Yeah, you're in a lot of venues that, you know, serve alcohol. That's got to be hard too, I would think.
It really isn't.
No.
There's occasionally, like, you know, someone's drinking like a craft cocktail that looks really good, or like an old fashioned or whatever, and I look at it and say, I bet that's really good.
Yeah.
But that's as far as it goes.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
I've been in a, you know, a bad place in my sobriety before where it's like, I'm in a bar and I really want to drink. And that's not pleasant, but I'm glad I'm not there now.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're in a better place now.
I appreciate it.
And yeah, everyone is, and that you're out there performing and willing to open up about that. So that's awesome.
I think it's important when it comes to mental health stuff, addiction stuff, for me to be vulnerable and open, you know, with my limited platform.
Sure.
You know, it's like, because so much of that stuff is stigmatized and, you know, just kind of brushed under the rug. People
right.
don't like to talk about it. And people feel like they're alone when they're dealing with that stuff.
Right.
And I think it's important for people to know they're not.
Right. Well, it helps bring you in, you know, people into your story and your music. You talking about it, you never know when it could help someone else down the road or open up, you know, let's not stigmatize this. Was there any example in any of that for you where you were happy someone else was talking about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have a lot of musical influences and, you know, people who I look up to who are recovering themselves and are pretty open about it. The biggest of those, I think, is Jason Isbell, who's like an Americana country type singer-songwriter. one of the best songwriters out there. But yeah, he's in recovery.
Okay.
You know, a lot of his music deals with it, and he's, you know, very open in his interviews and stuff talking about it. He's a person who I've looked at what he does, and I'm like, okay, because, you know, it can be a hard thing to be a musician in recovery, but, you know, I look at someone like him and I say, like, I can do this too.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
It turns out there's a lot of musicians. Weirdly, there's a lot of musicians who are dealing with addiction issues and who are in recovery. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco is another one.
Okay.
I mean, there's a ton.
Yeah.
But those
are
tough, like,
business. And you're in a lot of circumstances that doesn't make that easy on you.
And there's a lot of, you know, my musical heroes who dealt with addiction and, you know, lost the fight. Towns Van Zandt, who's, you know, one of my heroes too. He's one example. You know, he drank himself to death.
Mm.
And there's, you know, obviously tons of examples of that. For whatever reason, people in creative, in music, like, a lot of them have a really self-destructive streak, and I'm included in that.
Yeah.
It's important to not glorify that.
Yeah, that's a great statement, actually, because a lot of people will say a lot of good music comes out of hardship and life like that, but it's not something you want to do just so you have good music, you know?
Right. And my argument is that a lot of really good music has happened despite the, you know, self-destructive stuff that's going on with the people making it.
Sure.
Right? It's not like the drug use and the alcohol and all the reckless stuff, like, made the music better. It's like they were really creative people, and they were they somehow managed to make that,
right?
Despite that, and, like, imagine what it could have been if they were in a better place,
right?
You know, I can't write when I'm drinking. I can't write when I'm, you know, in that headspace. Like, for me, the creativity happens when I'm in a much better place. Usually, there's exceptions, but usually that's the case.
I got home last Friday night before the sun. I had to run, can't stand the light. I crawled in bed, but I don't get much sleep alone. I only know one way to come. Hello, oblivion. You're so reliable and sure. I've tried a million. I've tried a million times or more. When I get home and just can't stand my racing thoughts, you're all I've got. You're all I've got. Well, I went out, my intentions were quite plain. To kill the pain, fame. And by the time I realized I'd gone too far, I left the bar and stole the car. Hello, oblivion. You're so reliable and sure. I've tried a million. I've tried a million times or more. When I get home and just can't stand my racing thoughts, you're all I've got. You're all I've got. Thank you.
Hello, insanity. I think you might be good for me. Please keep me company. Don't let my good sense set me free. When I get home and just can't stand my racing thoughts, you're all I've got. You're all I've got.
All right, I'm here with Michael still, and we're having a great conversation. We just kind of went over your issues you face with addiction. You get over that, and then you also had some serious health issues. Can you talk about that at all? How are you doing today?
Today I'm good.
Okay.
Today is good. All right. This last summer was pretty scary. I went into the doctor in late June. I had like this weird stomach pain that was going on for a couple days, kind of in like my lower right abdomen, and it just seemed weird. It was tolerable, but weird. And I'm kind of a hypochondriac.
Okay.
So I was like, I'd better go in. So I think it was like June 23rd, I went to my doctor with this pain. And, you know, he ran some tests and did some stuff. And he's like, I think it's appendicitis, that your appendix needs to come out. But, you know, it would be good to get like a CT scan. So I got some imaging done. And it turned out, yes, I had appendicitis. My appendix needed to be removed. But also, it had inverted. My appendix had inverted into my colon. And like a chunk of my colon had become infected. The surgeon said she'd never seen anything like that before, which you always want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, that's always great.
Uh-huh.
So they did a surgery that same night to remove my appendix as well as a foot of my colon.
Wow.
Which that was like a, they said it was like a 3 to 5 day recovery, and then I'd have like a weight restrictions and stuff after that. And you know, I freaked out at that. Like,
yeah.
Being in the hospital for 3 days seemed horrible. I didn't want that. So I was already freaked out. But yeah, I got that surgery. I'm in the hospital recovering. And my condition just kept getting worse. You know, I couldn't keep down any food, not even any liquids. So they had to put like an NG tube up my nose. It goes up your nose and into your stomach. Super unpleasant to get one of those. I just kept getting worse, you know. And this was going on for over a week. And finally, you know, they made the call after doing some more imaging. You know, they found out that there was a spreading infection that was still going on, like in my colon area. So they finally decided that I needed to go in for another emergency surgery. And they took more of my colon out. They got all the infection out. But yeah, that was a more major surgery. They had to fully cut me open. I've got a big scar now. But yeah, so after that second surgery, stuff started improving. But I had to be there for quite a while, you know, before I was ready to leave the hospital. So all said and done, I was in the hospital for 22 days.
Wow, that's a long time.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's not fun.
I can imagine.
To spend that much time in a hospital, but it just isn't. And then, you know, of course, this is happening at like in the middle of summer, which is like the busy time as a musician, you know, so I had to cancel a lot of gigs. And yeah, it took me a while, even after I got out of the hospital, you know, before I was felt physically good enough to play again. So it was actually mid-August before I started playing music again. At this point, I think I'm pretty much through the thick of it.
Okay.
There were some, you know, there were some issues that happened along the path of recovery. I was back in the ER one other time.
Okay.
you know, now I just have some digestive issues. You know, I have like significantly less intestines now.
Yeah.
So they have to reroute everything. And when that happens, apparently it takes a lot of time for your digestive system to get back on track. But I'm pretty close to back to normal at point. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that. But it was scary.
I can imagine. That's a lot to go through. Not to, you know, it's not easy to sit in the hospital for 22 days. What was your headspace like in there? Was there, I mean, you're in pain and you're trying to recover. I mean, just curious if any, like, you worked on any music in your head or anything like that, or you just took it easy. You just wanted to relax. Like, what was?
I was pretty high all the time.
Oh, okay.
It's what they call a freelapse. You know, I'm obviously, you know, I had to be on pain pills.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I was just kind of loopy
for
a lot.
Okay.
I couldn't really write. I mean, I couldn't pick up my guitar. Just physically, I couldn't do it. And,
okay.
Yeah, I was kind of in a fog with the drugs.
Wow.
Especially after the second surgery. You know, I was, like, hooked up to... what's it called? It's where you like administer your own morphine.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, it was all a little bit foggy.
Okay, gotcha.
But I watched a lot of really bad reality television for some reason.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to watch when I was in that state. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, gotcha. So you go through a relapse in your sobriety. Get over that, get past that, I should say, start to get back into the music scene, and then you go, you know, you have this health issue. Now you're sidelined once again. So now here you are, and you have another album coming out. I mean, that's quite the journey to get through all that, and now you do have music coming out. Was this something that's been in the back burner for a while to keep you moving right now? Is it something you've crunched for recently? Like, what's that process been like?
Yeah, so it's a project that it really started, the bones of it started probably about a year ago. I laid down the demos, and at that time, it looked quite a bit different than it does now. At that time, I was envisioning having like a half acoustic and then half like full band situation. There were some certain production things that I was envisioning at that time. And fast forward, you know, after I get out of treatment again, I decided that this batch of songs would be better suited to just like a completely solo acoustic thing.
Okay.
I decided I wanted to do something that kind of was a representation of what I do live in a lot of ways. And I think that this material is suited to just being very minimalist.
Okay.
So yeah, I decided I was gonna do it all solo acoustic, and I also, there were some songs that were gonna be part of it that I took away. I was like, nope. And then I added some newer ones. There's three songs that will be on the record that I wrote while I was in treatment, actually, which was in like last February. So
all right, cool. So with that said, with your new album, which is called A Story I Can't Tell, right, is there a theme in this, you know, for this album then? Is it in just individual moments with each of your songs?
You know, so the title comes from actually one of the songs that'll be on the record. It's called All I Am, and I just think it's I think songwriting just generally, it's like I'm trying to tell this story, right, with my lyrics, but I can't ever really just get onto paper what's in my head. It's like, this is like, there's, it's the story that I can't tell. I just always have felt that way, you know. I'm scratching at the surface of something that's underneath, and I can't ever really get there. So that's kind of where the title comes from.
I love that. That's fascinating.
Yeah,
cool. Do you have a favorite song from the album, or one that, you know, hits you the hardest?
So I would say that my favorite is probably the one that I released as the lead single, Hello Oblivion.
Which is out now, right?
Which is out now. Yeah. You can find that anywhere you stream your music. That song is actually, I guess, relatively old at this point. I wrote it in 2019. And I think, you know, a lot of my music is about struggles with addiction. And I think that that song is as close as I've ever gotten to putting to music what active addiction is like. It's a really depressing song, which a lot of my music is. I write a lot of sad songs. But I just think that I'm trying to tell the truth in my music. You know, I'm trying to get closer to the truth about maybe it's an issue, usually about something going on internally. And I feel like I got really close to there with that song.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. And so that new album should be coming out in the next couple weeks.
Correct.
From the time of this recording, I should say.
Yeah.
November.
November.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. 2022 here, which it'll be very exciting. So before we go, I think we've covered a lot. Is there anything about the new album or anything you want to add about what's to come or what we've discussed already?
Yeah. I think I'm really excited about the direction that my music is going recently. I'm kind of moving past my roots in some ways, I think. I'm, you know, I'm writing songs that I'm envisioning with a full band behind me. And yeah, I have the demos down for the album that's going to happen after this one that I'm releasing in November. And it's just structurally, the songs are different. You know, I've been doing like the Americana folky thing for a long time, and these songs I don't think are really that.
Okay.
You know, they're influenced by a lot of stuff that I'm listening to recently, which is a lot of Wilco.
Right. So this is kind of full circling back to when we started this conversation to push yourself further into the stuff that scares you a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Very awesome. Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, well, we look forward to all that you have to offer and share and all your music to come. So I have one last question, though. One of your last shows, you mentioned wrote it down as a note as the monster song.
Mm.
And which song was that in reference to again?
The song is called, shit.
Far Away?
Far Away. Yeah. It's one of my things. I'm so horrible at remembering the names of my songs.
Okay.
And so if you go to one of my shows, you will always, you know, you will see me struggling to remember the names of the songs that I'm about to play. Right. But yes, Far Away. Yeah.
And you call it your monster song, and it was just kind of, what's the context behind that then?
Sure. So it's a song that's kind of all about horror movies.
Okay.
I love horror
films.
I really do. I actually have multiple songs that are kind of horror movie inspired. And yeah, the whole, you know, I guess the whole idea behind that song is like, I just love how in so much of the good horror, like, you know, there's this question about like, okay, are the monsters real? Like, are the ghosts real? Is any of this actually happening? Or is this just like, you know, in the character's head or heads, you know? And really, you know, the monsters, the ghosts, the vampires, they're all like usually like a metaphor for some, you know, just greater human fear, you know, existential dread.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of a song about that.
Cool. With that said, do you have a favorite horror movie?
I have a couple favorite horror movies. You know, I think my very favorite horror movie is probably It Follows.
Okay.
Which is like a movie about I'm not gonna give away spoilers. You should just go see that movie. But I have another song that is called It Follows. I wrote it after the first time I saw that movie.
Okay.
And yeah, it's an amazing film. Hereditary is up there too. You should watch that. Ari Aster is a phenomenal horror director.
Cool. I mean, going back to It Follows, I mean, must have leave quite the impact for you to have write a song after that, right?
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't happen very often. It's happened a few times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Michael, thanks for joining me on the podcast here.
Thank you so much,
I appreciate
Drew.
You opening up about your history and your journey so far. I know there's lots more to come, and many of us will continue to look forward to seeing you around the area performing and putting out new music.
Well, I so appreciate it, Drew. Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
There's no way out, no way out of my mind. Dark, dark black cloud, storms inside. There's no way out, no way out of this place. Running fast, but just can't keep this pace. But when the night gets cold, I hope I find someone to hold. Tumble and I'll roll until I stumble on my home. I've been thinking about you. And all the rings of hell put me through. And I've been thinking about it. I'm running fast, just can't catch my breath. But when the night gets cold, I hope I find someone to hold. I tumble and I'll roll until I stumble on my home. And I can't see what's become of me. Laughed when you said your show truth would set me free. Laughed when you said your show the truth would set me free. I've been watching all the snow come in and burying my secrets in this town. And I've been watching my back. Running fast, just can't get on track. But when night gets cold, I hope I find someone to hold. I'll tumble and I'll roll until I stumble on my home. Tumble and I'll roll until I stumble on my home.
All right, everyone, welcome back to The Drew Hahn Show. First of all, I just want to let you know that last song you just heard was Michael Grabner's latest release, No Way Out. And I think it's such a beautiful song. I don't know about you guys, but it actually gives me some Pearl Jam vibes in the tune of the song Just Breathe. Anyone else following me on that at all? What'd y'all think? I mean, that was some interview. And I just felt extremely honored that I got a chance to talk to him in that capacity. Real Barbara Walters kind of special, you know what I'm saying? And I look forward to catching his music more live in the area. He plays in the Valley regularly and beyond in this lovely state of Wisconsin. So if you get an opportunity, please go check him out. Michael will have a complete album out down the road here, so keep your eyes peeled on all the socials. If you're not following Michael, please go do so. Meanwhile, thanks for listening to today's episode and any other episodes you might have listened to. You know, your listenership is very important to me. I love feedback, too, so like, follow, and share. But most importantly, please comment somewhere regarding the show. It really helps gauge the direction we should go here on The Drew Hahn Show. A reminder, you can listen on all podcasting platforms, including Apple and Spotify. We have our socials as well, Facebook and Insta, so go there quickly. Hit the follow and like buttons, you know what to do.
It's been a very exciting season here on the show. I have more artist interviews ahead. If you liked what you heard in this episode, I think you'll really enjoy my interview with Carter Halsey. That's coming up in a couple weeks. He was recently in the area and performed a full band show that mesmerized and captivated us in the audience. So keep your eyes peeled and make sure you're following along on the socials so you don't miss that. Well, you guys, thanks again for listening. Thanks, Michael, for joining me on the show. I'm Drew Hahn. This is The Drew Hahn Show, and I'll see you around the mile.
Tumble and I'll roll until I stumble on my home.